This is Outside the Round with Matt Barile, a Rage Rowdy podcast.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Outside the Round with me, Matt Barile. Today, a very special guest. He's an OG in town. He's been over on the Rage Rowdy podcast. He's getting ready to put out some new music. He's from the great state of Arkansas. We got our man Matt Stell with the tallest microphone setup I have ever had in my years of doing these podcasts, brother. How you doing?
Man, I'm doing well this morning. And I don't know. I feel pretty good about the fact that that's the tallest mic stand, but only because I have terrible posture, so I'm trying to make myself sit up straight.
Yeah,
because I got to go home for Thanksgiving, and I'm gonna hear about it. So
yeah, you going back to Arkansas?
Going back to Arkansas. Yeah, we're gonna leave tonight and get back, and I do a lot of the cooking, which I like it.
Shit! Okay, look at you, Chef Matt, in the kitchen.
Yeah, well, so my mom is just a badass in every way.
Yeah.
And you know, she was like, you know, for a lot of my life, you know, it was just me and her, you know, growing up. And she like got most of her PhD done as a single mom and like did all this crazy shit that's awesome and is one of the best barrel racers in the state of Arkansas.
Oh, this day. And
does all this stuff, like all this outside. But the joke is like she just doing all that, she never had time to like cook. She just eats to live. She doesn't live to eat, like, you know. And so when we do anytime I'm back home, but especially like Thanksgiving and Christmas and stuff, I try to get in the kitchen and make something happen, because if not, it's gonna be not great.
What are your specialties,
man? I'll make a gumbo before Thanksgiving, just to eat on like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
A little Cajun, something warm when it's a little cold out there. Yeah. I like it. Good for the soul.
Yeah, my wife killed a big ass deer in Oklahoma a few weeks ago, so I'll probably make some chili out of that. Just stuff that can sit around, you know?
Yeah.
And that's good, that stays good. But yeah, whatever. Yeah, I'll cook the turkey. I'm going to brine it. I don't know if I'll fry it, but yeah. Whatever, I like to get down in the kitchen a little bit.
Yeah, the first time I ever had a deep fried turkey was actually my Uncle Ted. He's from Arkansas.
Okay, originally. Uncle Ted, shout out Uncle Ted.
Ted Llewellyn, Uncle Ted. I'm from New York, and he was like, man, we're going to fry a turkey this year. I was like, I didn't know you could deep fry. I was a little kid in the New York City suburb, and Uncle Ted came up there, and he fried that turkey. And
so he was like, son,
didn't blow up, which is good.
What can't you fry?
Yeah, honestly.
Show me something you can't fry.
Honestly, man. So growing up in Arkansas, it's a state I've done my travels to George's Majestic, and there's great venues in Fayetteville, and
absolutely,
been to Little Rock, and been out towards like Pine Bluff, been to Mountain Home out there and the mountains and everything.
Absolutely,
what's it like growing up out there? I know you've been living out here for a while, but take us to small town Center Ridge, Arkansas.
Yeah, man. I mean, I grew up on a cattle farm, and I'm from Arkansas. I was born there. My mom got remarried. We moved to Florida. So I spent a lot of my like kindergarten through eighth grade. I was in like, in Bradenton, south of Tampa, Florida.
Oh, nice.
And then I'd be back in Arkansas summers and stuff like that, and Christmases and stuff. But, which I mean, maybe made me appreciate it, I guess, you know, more. You can, like we were talking a little bit before we started, you end up making your own fun. You end up outside a lot. You end up, yeah, it's a great place to be if you can make your own fun, you know what I mean? And then, you know, when you get wheels underneath you, when you get, you know, four-wheelers or you know, trucks later on, when you get a little older, then it really opens up, you know. You're not as dependent on somebody to take you on a ride for something, you know.
Yeah, dude, because you have to do a lot of driving to get to places out there, man.
Yeah, 100%. It's a long way from everywhere. We're like almost 30 minutes from Walmart. So yeah, like I'm from like a small town.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, I love it, but, and it has its charms, but you know, it's never like, oh, I'm hungry. Let's just Uber Eats something. It's like, nah,
just Uber Eats. Let's just go down to 12 South or somewhere that's here in Nashville with the city living. What were your initial thoughts when you moved out here, man? Cause you've been here a little over 10 years, right?
Yeah, man. Well, you know, I was kind of, you know, in and out a little bit beforehand, try, like I thought I was going to come here and like write a week out of the month and like get big cuts on country artists. And that was my goal. And then have my own, which, you know, we'll talk about that later, but like have my own like thing that I did and then write these country hits. And, you know, like looking back, it's like, man, that's kind of arrogant to think you're just going to come to town and write songs with the best songwriters and you're about to say some stuff that they've never heard of. It's like, once I figured out, like, once I got here and played some writer's rounds and just went and watched some people play, and I was like, oh my God, I will never write a song that good, you know? And then I was like, okay, well, there's no part-time in this, right? So, you know, I had a little success writing some songs in the Texas world with a few Texas artists, and it gave me the confidence to kind of come here and do this. But, man, once you get here, it's like, yeah, the learning curve is steep, but it's awesome.
Bro, it's the athlete mentality. Yeah. You came here like you have that basketball background and growing up playing sports, where it's like you get on the floor, and no matter where you're at, even if you're not necessarily at the level, you play up, and you're like, I've got that confidence where I can dunk on these guys. I can hit a three.
Yeah.
Same thing when you come here as an artist. So it makes sense. You're young. You come up here like...
Yeah, man, it's similar. Like, you... certainly playing against better competition makes you better, right?
Yeah.
And you know, like, a lot of it is you don't, people, I'm in a position now where, you know, people like ask me, oh, what should I do? You know, and it's like, if you're trying to be a songwriter, it's like, it's really cliche, but it's like, man, like, probably the best advice is to move here. You know, like, even if I remember when I first started making music, like, I wanted nothing to do with what I considered Nashville country.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in that, and you know, I really fell in love with, like, Texas country, Americana, like, red, whatever you want to call it. But sort of that independent streak in the country music that sounded a little bit more like something older, and I just didn't like it. I didn't care for anything coming out of here. And then I got here and I realized, A, a lot of the stuff that I liked was coming out of here.
Yeah.
Just branded a little different. And then B, it's like, you know, how many great songs, and like the concentration of like unbelievable songwriters, no matter what kind of songs that you're into, here is where it is, you know, especially in the country or Texas country or red dirt or Americana world, like this is kind of ground zero for it. And it's still amazing. Like, I was still on my TikTok, somebody like some song will pop up and I'll just be like, damn, it's a great song. You know, it'll be like a quote unquote simple country song, but it's like, those are the hardest. But yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, man. There's so many kids and people coming up, and I feel like now with the way that social media is, it's easier to get your name out there. I say it's easier to get on the highway as far as getting music out and stuff, but there's just a lot more traffic when you're going to get off that exit. Like, there's so 100%. Many guys and girls doing it now to where it's a different thing versus rewinding back to when you were starting in the 2010s. I mean, like, you had Vine, you had Facebook, you had YouTube, you had shit like
that. Yeah, I mean, you were starting to see, like, you know, I got to town and benefited from independent music being made, like, the start of that happening. Like, you know, when Prayed For You came out, the reason that I had success with it was because we made an EP, and then you know, it got playlisted, right? Like, or you know, it caught a little bit of fire. So it was like, we definitely were the indie artists that sort of put something out in the world and it somehow caught, you know, in some way. But, you know, and then, but to watch the acceleration of that, you know, to watch, I think I saw a stat where like Red Clay Strays, you know, one, you know, group of the year, and I think I read somewhere where there's like they're being played on like three radio stations right now.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like it speaks to a lot of different things. You know, like, my first, I have to really watch out because not as much anymore, but like, used to be, my first thought was just like, yeah, see, everybody's trying to fucking keep the good shit down, and like, it's like, no, it's also that, you know, a country radio is a different kind of music than that, but it's just under a big umbrella. But anyway, to say all that, to say, it's like, it's really cool to see music, like you said, it's like, now there's a lot of traffic. It used to be, I want to get heard, and now it's like, you have to be raised above all the noise, you know. Before it was a bottleneck, and now it's just like kind of a free-for-all. It's cool, but it's different.
Yeah, man, and as like a music consumer, which I'm sure you started out as like a lover of music. Yeah. I feel like nobody gets into this shit if they don't love music, you know?
I think more, you said it exactly, but I'll even take it a step farther. It's like, not even not even just artists and players. Like, if you get into wanting to build an awesome brand around country music like Raised Rowdy, yeah. or you want to, you know, my manager sitting right there, you want to work in music, you know, he and I, we got to be best friends in about 20 minutes because he drove up and had a drive-by trucker sticker in the back glass of his truck.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so like...
Good stuff.
Yeah, so like those kind of people, like publishers, music, entertainment lawyers, like radio PDs or whatever, like everyone in the periphery of this, the one thing that we share, we might not share what we love, but we share a love of music.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it special and awesome, and that's like the heartbeat of this of the like city, and it's like, you know, we were briefly kind of talking about this before then, when like you can get inside it and kind of forget the whole reason you wanted to do
You get so close to the sun and you get stuck in this bubble, man.
Yeah, it's a classic tough. Forest for the trees kind of thing, you know, and you start trying to you know, maybe your taste change, but then also you start having other priorities because you kind of have to. But you know, at the end of the day, it all comes back to the fact that we all love music, and I love music so much that I hate most music. You know what I mean? Like, I love what I love so much that it makes me like actively dislike.
You yeah. know?
I'm less like that now because once you make it and you realize that just because you don't like it doesn't mean it's not good, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's a big, you know, at first I used to say things like, oh, that artist sucks. And it's like, back when I was on the come up, it was like, now I look back, it's like, no, that artist does not suck. You just don't like songs about kids.
It's just
kids.
Not my thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You don't like songs about being the world's best dad, you know?
Yeah.
Like, no, that song doesn't suck.
Yeah, which when you're young and on the come up, it's not something you can relate to. You're not the guy he's putting that song out for.
Yeah, and then now I hear some of those songs and I'll be like, oh my God, what a lyric. Or you know, then I got married, you know, first of this year, and it's like, dude, I didn't have three love songs on that phone right there, you know, and then now it's like all those songs start to make sense, and like I start listening to stuff, and then I start realizing that all my favorite songs about, you know, whiskey and the road and all this shit is just a bunch of it's just a different set of cliches that I loved and was trying to use it in my music. It wasn't better or worse. It was just like, you know, that world. Anyway, that's some growth that I've had.
That was the chapter that you were living, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that was the chapter. And you talk about like going arounds and stuff. That's a world that we're heavily involved with Raised Rowdy. We do a lot of events in town, and I've been hosting them since freaking 2019. I like to say that I was doing them BC before COVID, when the world all got all fucked up and changed or whatever.
Oh,
but
man.
Like, what was the round scene like, and where were you going and hanging out when you first got here? Because 2014's like, my head goes to Whiskey Jam, it goes to Revival, it goes to Why Not Wednesday, like it goes to some sick events.
I mean, I think like Whiskey Jam served as the like kind of baseline for everything. Because even, you know, it got to be so big there for a minute that it was like less about you couldn't really hear the music all the time going on, but you could get the vibe, and you would hear it. Like, don't get me wrong, but it also became a place where, you know, when you first get to town, you know, like I'm like everybody else, you know, it's like kind of awkward to go out by yourself and things like that. And you kind of like a little bit self-conscious. I was, but you could go to Whiskey Jam and at least a good handful of the people there in the same boat you are.
Yeah.
So you either going to make friends or you're going to be judged less harshly for the, like, no one's judging you anyway, but you know what I'm saying? Like that in your mind, you're like, oh my God, dude, what am I doing with my hands? I feel weird here.
Bro,
by myself.
I've been there, man. Yeah.
Impediment to people getting to town and figuring stuff out is like, you got to get out and go kind of do it, even though there's those awkward moments and, oh, I'm going to forget somebody's name, somebody's going to forget my name, and those kinds of things. But I remember that, you know, Whiskey Jam was big. Belcourt Taps had, remember Belcourt?
Oh, yeah, dude? Man.
Belcourt had, like, my cousin, she was, is a fantastic singer and was in a band, and they were signed to Big Machine at the time, and it was, she, you know, and it was like, so when I would come to town some, you know, I would, she was always really good about, you know, if I was in town, I'd be like, yeah, you know, swing through, whatever. Yeah. And then, you know, and she was like, she's an unbelievable singer, and everybody in her band was so awesome. And that's the thing too. Like, everyone here is so, they're so good.
There's so much talent.
Everyone here is so good. Like, the level, what good is, good, Nashville good is like unbelievable musicianship.
Yeah.
And whatever. And so I remember getting here and like listening room. Also, you know, it's a still great. You
the
know,
OG listening.
Yeah,
room. OG. You were there for the OG.
I was
one.
There for the OG listening room. Yeah, and then you know, even now, like I when people ask what to go do in town, I'll say go to a writer's round. And a lot of times, it's just easier to tell them because you know, listening room will have two shows a night, right? So you can just tell them, like, you know, go down there and check that out because everybody loves music. But not everybody loves songs, you know? And so when you go there and you can, it's just a different experience.
Yeah.
Because you know, everybody wants to come to town and go to Broadway, and that's great. Like, I've had a great
time. You gotta go at least once.
Yeah.
You gotta go if you're visiting.
Oh, dude. And also, like, if you have people in town that haven't been, that's the fun part for me going now. Like, I don't want to go to Broadway, but necessarily. Like, I'm not gonna go grab a beer at you know, Aldean's, but you know, yeah. But if I have people here, like, oh, let's go to Broadway. Like, yeah, I want to go watch you have fun. Go watch all these bands, all these levels.
Oh,
it's very
bro,
special.
Yeah, dude,
know?
The energy of watching yeah. those musicians and those
yeah,
cover
man.
Bands just grind.
Just grind and watching the people that are there with you get blown away by these people that are, you know, for the most part really good. You know, that's great. But to answer your question, I would say, like, you know, those were a couple of the rounds, Whiskey Jam. Bus Call, Revival, those kinds of like show up hangouts, and yeah. then the other, like the rounds where there'd be like Eighth, what was that place on Eighth, right across from Zany's?
The Poorhouse. Right across from Zany's. Oh, that was Douglas Corner.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Douglas
yeah.
Corner was there for a long time. Now so, it's something else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I mean, there's a bunch of great places. And you just hear these songs and you hear people singing them and hear people like playing guitar while they're singing them. And you just me going, I'm going to go drive some more Uber tonight. Like, I just go think about my life, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I did. I did everything when I first.
Yeah. Who were some of like your first crew? Like, you talk about those awkward moments of going to Winners for the first time or going out and then you make those friends
yeah.
with the other guys or girls that are new to town. Like, who were some of the other folks that you remember? Like, your homies
yeah.
you'd end up at Red Door with or people like that.
Yeah. Well, so I think Joe Fox is one of my we moved to town about the same time.
No shit. I didn't
yeah.
know that.
Yeah,
that's
me
cool.
We didn't know each other.
Yeah.
We met each other through ASCAP. So
yeah.
ASCAP has like a little program where they'll like put it's really cool. It's like the GPS program or whatever. And so they'll like put together these writers' camps and they have like, you know, a dozen writers and they have you writing three times a day for like 4 days a week. It was just super cool. And I met Joe and we hit it off. And, you know, we've written singles together. I've cut songs that he's written. You know,
he's a Jersey boy,
and
too.
He's a Jersey
he's from,
boy.
From my neck of the woods,
yeah,
a Monmouth
man.
County boy.
Yeah.
yeah,
exactly. And he's crushing it right now,
oh,
too.
Oh, he is,
so.
Yeah.
Him, Paul Sykes has been a good buddy of
oh,
mine
dude,
for
what a guy,
the best guy in the
what
world.
What a guy!
Man. Yeah, yeah. I've been knowing him and them for a long time, and we've been making music together. You know, he's kind of from here, so he you know he was sort of always here. But anyway, we got to hanging out pretty regular, and you know it's crazy like how life takes you. You know, I need to make sure and I need to reconnect with those guys. I saw Paul at the ASCAP Awards a couple nights ago, and I randomly ran into Joe the other day. But
yeah.
it's like, yeah, man, those are like OG buddies for sure.
Yeah, man. Every life happens, man. You know,
yeah.
and it's like everybody gets busy and goes and everybody goes through like different journeys, which is why
mm-hmm.
I'm so excited for this next chapter of
yeah.
what you've got cooking, man, and Sugarcoat and like
yeah.
tell me about this switch of because you're a guy that's been here a while.
Yeah.
You've seen success, you've done the touring thing, you've done the radio tour thing, you've
mm-hmm.
written hits, you've been fortunate to put some out.
Yeah.
Talk about kind of this new era of where Matt Stell is going.
Well, you know, I'm very lucky, you know, I moved to town and like we were speaking briefly about it before, but you know, I wrote a song that changed my life and opened up a lot of doors. I didn't know that I had written that song. I didn't know that Prayed for You was that when we wrote it. I thought, oh, we wrote a cool song today. And then we put it out and I really thought, okay, cool. Cause I put the song out on an EP with my publisher at the time. And I was like, okay, well, we got this EP out. Okay, we'll put this song on there. And then maybe somebody will cut it, you know, because everybody was kind of like, you know, in my little world was like, oh, this is a great song. Well, long story kind of short, you know, that was Spotify got a hold of it and put it on New Boots or something, and it just kind of blew up.
Yeah.
And then John Marks, he was running it at the time, gave it a chance on Hot Country, and it just blew up. And like, I got, you know, a call from a record label and whatever. That's how that story went. And so that changed my life. But the point of that, of me saying that, is I thought I was writing that song for another artist to cut. I was really proud of that song, but I thought, like we were speaking before, I wanted to be like Jaren Johnson or Stapleton. Like, I wanted to write country hits and then have my own like band where I kind of chased my muse around, you know? And the door opened up for this song, just was like, changed my life. And so I became the like country, I became the guy on the radio, you know, for a few years. And that was awesome. But it was also like, you know, having to feed this beast that I wasn't, I don't want to ever be negative. I'm very happy. I'm very proud of that song. It wasn't the music I thought that I was going to make as an artist.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, fast forward, like, you know, we have a couple hits, then COVID hits, and then, you know, we make a couple runs at radio and have a little success. But then it was like, man, you know, I really moved to town because I love country songwriting. But I, you know, me as an artist, the kind of music I want to make, I don't like, I would turn in songs that I would love, and I have a great team, but I would turn in songs that I would love. And, you know, my record label at the time would be like, this is cool, but like, what, you know, we don't have a place for this, you know, but cool song, bro, you know, like in a positive way. But it's like, they can't go out and market, they can't put it on country radio or whatever. And so, yeah, like,
which is where you were at the time. Well, that's what they were looking for.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, again, I was very, very happy about that chapter of life. And who knows, like, the point of, like, who knows where anything's going to end up. I didn't think, you know, that was going to happen in the first place. But, you know, now it's like, I was doing this thing and turning in these songs, and I felt like I had, maybe something to say is a little too pretentious, but I felt like I wanted to do something that was like less worried about what anyone was going to think about it, and just wanted to kind of make shit I thought was cool.
Yeah.
And some of it is country and some of it's not. And so I would turn that in, and then, you know, my manager and my management was like, you know, why don't we just kind of chase this down? You know, you're kind of drifting away from the sort of radio grounding that we had. And they were like, why don't we embrace that? Why don't we make the fact that you do different stuff, that you're interested in different things, that you, your influences are different, like, and you make different music. Why, you know, up to that point, that was a little bit of a liability because of, you know, feeding the radio kind of beast. And they were just like, well, why don't we turn that liability into an asset? Why don't you just do whatever you want to do? And my folks, my publisher, my folks at EMG, they, you know, basically did a label deal around that idea. And then it was kind of a collaboration with my management and me on trying to figure out, you know, what's it going to look like? What are we going to call it? You know, those kinds of things. And then it just turned into this project that I'm working on right now. And, it's called Adrift, and then, you know, the first song on it, Sugarcoat. And, yeah, man, when we cut it, I was just like, this isn't like, I don't know what it is. I don't care really what it is. You know, I just know that I like it. And so that's where we are, man. And just following that thing, you know, trying to do something that kid sitting at the end of his dorm bed with the guitar would be like, oh, okay, this is dope, or this is more chasing the muse that you kind of thought would be in the beginning. You know, that's what I'm really excited about. So yeah, man,
it's got to be like a liberating feeling to be in the game. Because again, I mean, you've had great success, and that's a huge blessing. But it's, you go down roads sometimes in life that you become grateful for, but they're not the roads that you initially set out to do. And now you've put yourself in a position to where you can do what you want to do. And I love the title, Adrift. Like, it sounds like it's drifting away to a path that you've been wanting to go down all along.
Yeah, man. And it's like, who knows? It, like, this is, I've learned that when you make music, you only ever, like, something is done when you run out of both time and money.
Yeah.
Like, I've never.
It's a great way to look at it.
Yeah.
I've never thought about it that way.
It's never like, I remember trying to, like, wanting to make these seminal records, you know, like, I want to make, like, Purgatory, you know, like the Tyler Childers record that changed, like, but even that was like, it exists in a period of time. So, like, I don't know what comes after this. I just know what I'm doing right. I mean, I may go back to what, who knows, like, or I may stick with this or whatever. I don't have to, like, think about that anymore. And so, like, I'm just enjoying the time in the moment doing something that, like, you know, creatively is interesting, the most interesting, you know, to me. And yeah, that part, like you said, you know, kind of drifted, that was the whole kind of, that was the whole vibe of what we were kind of going for.
I love it.
I appreciate it.
That's sick. How many songs are we looking at on there?
Well, so it's initially three. And then, like, we'll drop kind of singles that'll end up being, you know, an EP, and then, you know, go from there. That's kind of what I felt like, you know, talk about, like, earlier about the differences in making music and, you know, even 5 years ago or 10 years ago for sure. Like, you know, now if you don't put time into promoting each one as a single, you know, hopefully you get to a point where you put out a record and people will listen, you know, kind of through it. But I've done that, and I, you know, it's better when, I would rather have a collection of singles that get their own time to shine and they're like, yeah, one thing, man, together, than try to make a project that, where something might get lost in the shuffle. Cause, you know, I made a record, I guess, last year, and I'm really, really proud of a lot of it. But I feel like, you know, a couple of the things we got lost in the shuffle a little bit. No, for no fault of anything. It's just like, you know, it's hard to keep attention.
That's how it is now, dude. I mean, you got guys putting out double albums and then dropping a single like 2 weeks after the record comes out.
Yeah.
It's a wild time to be releasing music.
It is. And you have the kind of artists that release, you know, you've got, you know, Luke and Cody and Morgan and Zach Bryan, and that whatever amount of music they release is going to get listened to by a fan base that really, really loves what they do. And I'm one of them. I mean, I like all of that.
Yeah.
For different reasons and different degrees, you know, like, or I say I'll find something in all of it that I like. But you know, for somebody like me, especially with trying to do something new, I don't have the benefit of the doubt of oh, you know, The Drift put out a record, let's go listen to 20 songs. It's like, no, I'm going to have to win them over a little bit before I can start being that prolific. And, you know, that's fun. I think most of us are kind of in that world a little bit. And it's just something that, you know, too, that I've learned. Like, because I'm somebody that, so for instance, like, that Vincent Mason song, Hell Is a Dance Floor.
Yeah,
I love that song,
it's a
right?
Smash, man.
Yeah, and I don't know Vincent or nothing, but I did message him, like, when I heard the song. I just caused, like, bro, this is a great song. And it's awesome watching, you know, kind of what he's doing. But I sort of lost my train of thought talking about him, because that song is awesome.
Yeah, Vincent's a great dude.
But
good people.
Yeah, I can't remember what I was going to make a point about something there, but it'll come back to me.
Releasing music and The Drift and everything kind of having its moment.
Oh, yeah. I guess maybe like, yeah, okay. So that's right. Thank you. So, you know, that song, when I heard that song, you know, I went to, like, listen to everything else. Like, I like, if I find a song that I really dig, I want to go listen to the project.
The project or the catalog, if it's,
yeah,
like somebody
catalog.
New and
exactly.
The guy or girl's only got four or five songs.
Exactly.
Like, give me all four or five.
Exactly.
Let me see if these other four or five give me that feeling.
100%. Just like that Hudson Westbrook song.
Oh, dude, another great buddy. Yeah.
That song, I mean, I just, actually a good songwriter buddy of ours just sent me that out of the blue. He's like, bro, this is dope. And it was. And so I just like started listening. You know, that was before that If You Know Me was out. So I was like going off of like past records. But that's how I like to consume music. Like, yeah. Okay, cool. Let me hear what you got. You know, but that's just not most people. You know, most people want to catch something on a playlist and go, oh, I like that. You know, and that's cool because my whole life is music. And most people's whole lives are a lot, you know, are not.
Yeah. The music is working a 9-to-5 and the music's what they listen to on the way home and on the way to work.
Music is a side dish. It is not the main course. You know?
Dude, it's the main course for us. It's the main course, the side dish, the dessert, the drinks. Exactly. It's all of it, bro.
For us it is 100%. So, but anyway, you know, that's just like, just thinking about how, you know, music is consumed these days, you know, yeah. But what's really special though, what's really cool is how the impact that a song can have, man. I mean, it can, it's just so cliche, but it's so true. It's like, it could just change your whole life.
Take me back to 2014, 2015. You're a younger guy coming out here. And, you said that you remember like songs kind of making you stop in your tracks being like, oh shit, that's good. Like, do you remember like a song having a moment like before you took off as an artist with Prayed For You? Like, do you remember being at Bell Court or being at Douglas Corner or Revival and hearing a song? Because, like, for me, I moved here 2018. So, for me, it was like Hardy was starting to have his moment. And, like She Got the Best of Me going number one. I remember watching that at Revival with Channing and Big Rob Snyder. You know, it's like, do you have any of those memories where you remember kind of seeing an artist take off maybe before you did?
I don't. Certainly like seeing some artists like really, you know, really pop off. I'm trying to think of like at that time, like Cadillac 3 was, you know, I mentioned Jared.
They were badass. They
were,
dude.
They were probably already catching on, but I had just got to town, you know, and like, I was like, and again, Jared doing that thing, like writing these hit country songs and then having this badass band. And I was like, that sounds awesome.
You're like, that's what I want to do.
That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
I want to do that. You know, Daryl Scott does that same thing, you know? Yeah. I remember that. I remember, I don't know if it's when I moved. It's hard to, you know, it's like the dates get kind of fuzzy in there. But I remember seeing Jonathan Singleton at Whiskey Jam one night.
Bro, Jonathan and the Grove, his old band project. Oh, they were so good,
unbelievable. But he, you know, he was up there playing, you know, hits. But like, I remember seeing him play. You know, watching Airplanes and. A guy walks into a bar, and I remember that song specifically being like, that song is so good. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those songs that I've tried to write 100 times. You know, like, not that, but, you know, like, I want to tell a story in the chorus that does this kind of thing. And
has that progression to it.
Has that progression. Yeah. Like, the verse sets up the chorus, and it's just like, I remember hearing it, that kind of sticks out of seeing that at Whiskey Jam inside, you know, at Losers. And I'm sure I could think of some others, but right now that
and
was
the funny story
out.
Of that song was Tyler Farr found out about it because he just happened to be getting a beer that night and heard Jonathan play it and was like, what's going on with this? And then that's how a guy walks into a bar. It's Jonathan's just playing a Monday or a Thursday over there at Winners, and
that's crazy.
It's wild, but that's the power of Nashville, like you said, like the good songs. Yeah. And I feel like back then, before it was you have to get this thing to blow up on TikTok, it was a guy or a girl or a suit or somebody seeing somebody play it, and it was like that song has a moment. That's how a song would get on hold.
Know? Yeah, or, you know, the publishers, you know, going around and pitching, you know, doing that same thing, but in offices and pitching the songs. But, like, it's just, I didn't realize that, I mean, again, it just goes back to, like, I didn't realize how good was when I first got here. But I just remember, like, dude, I mean, somebody like Jonathan Singleton can sing better than most of us. Can play guitar better than almost all of us, can write a song better than almost all of us, and then, oh, by the way, can build a company, you know,
and produce
smash hits. And it's just like, it's just kind of like, it's amazing, you know, and it's just, it's special, you know, and he's from like, he's from, you know, less of nowhere than I'm from, but he's, you know, Jackson's not
Jackson,
like that,
Tennessee,
not
baby.
Not that much either. So it's like, it's just a cool, special place. But then to that point, like, you know, Jonathan had a band that's awesome, and then was just like, you know what? I don't want to do the band thing or my time. I don't know. I don't know exactly. You know, I don't want to tell his story because I don't exactly know it. But but just all that to be said. But like somebody that has been there as an artist, has been there as a writer, and you know, had and a producer, and has success on all that stuff. Just kind of shows you like the mini paths, the way the doors open up. Because I mean, if you heard Jonathan Singleton singing "Guy Was Into a Bar," you would wonder. I mean, Tyler Farr's unbelievable. He's awesome. One of my buddies is, you know, plays guitar for him. Tyler's always been cool to me, and he's great. But you would hear Jonathan Singleton playing that song in a bar and be like, why isn't this person the most famous person in the world?
Right?
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. That's a great question.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. I mean, that's like you hear there's so many people that just are on that side of it that are incredible. And on that, like, you even look at, like, some of the legendary, like, OG writers, like the Craig Wisemans and the Bob DePuros and the Jeffrey Steeles and the Jesse Alexanders on the female side that are, like...
Oh, 100%. And the ones that not only write like that, but also sing incredibly great. And like, you know, and some of them just, like, the road... Yeah, I mean, whatever the point that I'm trying to make is, like, you know, the music that gets made here is unbelievable, and you know, that's another reason why, you know, at least for me, if I'm going to be making new music and doing new stuff, that I really want it to be aimed at the target of like what I like, and I'm all over the place. You know, like artistically, like what I think is interesting, because when you do get to town and you do, you know, get people to believe in what you're doing and then have some success, you know, you'll put pressure on yourself probably to make decisions, and it'll make decisions that are coming from a good place, but they're it's not necessarily serving the music, it's sort of serving the marketplace a little bit. And there's nothing wrong with making a living playing music.
Like, no, not
like
at all.
Like, you have to make those decisions. But, like, I'm just at a point now to where, you know, I want to play inspired music as much as I can and all the time. And I want to keep trying to, like, ring that bell as opposed to, you know, worry about what other people might think of the music that I'm making when I don't like the music they like anyway. You know what I mean? And so I, you know, that to me is the point of like the drift and all this. Cause it's like, even now, like this project doesn't even sound like one thing. Like, it sounds like, you know, the first song on it doesn't sound like the second song, and it probably won't sound like the third song.
But it sounds like you.
Yeah, it sounds
which
like,
is the big thing, because you're more than just one flavor of ice cream, brother. Like, it's the different sides of you, and it's letting the fans more into you than you've probably been able to do with your releases, right?
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, I've got a couple horror stories about, you know, the business side of stuff, but for the most part, man, you know, I think I've gotten done right by in a lot of ways, and you know, I've had some freedom to do some stuff, and that's been cool. But it very much is when you're an artist, right? Like, I'm just like, you talk about being different flavors of ice cream.
Yeah.
People will associate you with that flavor of ice cream, you know, all the time.
I feel like it's different now, though, because I feel like guys are taking more chances. I really do.
But it's like, and it's a beauty of the world we live in musically, where, you know, to make great music requires less stuff, right? So we just named a bunch of records that we like, that you mean you sitting here, that are awesome, that, like, I mean, Zach Bryan's filling up stadiums with, you know, with iPhone recordings, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, so it's like, why not take the swings? It's like, you don't have the overhead that you once did of getting a whole band together at Ronnie's place and you know, having to pay scale and then master scale something goes out. I mean, all that's great, and they're awesome, and it's worth it, and it's, that's great. But it also, unless you're, you know, Luke Combs, like you can't take a bunch of those swings and them not work out, because it's just you're getting something awesome, but you get what you pay for, and you know, it's expensive. So
yeah.
Now when you can make music in the box, when you can write songs, you can be much more prolific in terms of getting songs back with demos and stuff like that. You know, it allows for more pitches you can swing at.
Yeah, have you seen that AI thing? It's like Sono or Suno.
Yeah.
Bro, we were down at the Floribama for the Frank Brown Songwriters Festival. We had some buddies that we brought down there with us, and they were showing me some of their some of the stuff they've been working on. They were like, oh, check this Suno thing out. And then it was like, I was like, holy shit, like,
yeah,
this is a game changer. I'm all not about like the AI as an artist thing, but I think as a tool to get your work to a demo quick.
Yeah, for 20
pitching,
seconds. For
pitching, it's incredible.
It's a tool, like, you know, I'm never impressed with the, so Suno or, you know, AI music AI is a tool. I've used it. I use it for that very reason that you're saying, is because I have ideas, but I don't have the wherewithal to, like, I can't play the drums, you know, I can't play the drums or the keys very well. And I can play guitar good enough to write the song, but I can't, you know. So if you talk to Suno like it is the producer that you're having to lean on anyway, and be like, man, I wish this thing sounded heavier. And you tell it to sound heavier, and you tell it that 30 times, and you get something heavier that you like, cool. That is a tool to get the idea that I had down quicker. I don't use it to generate the ideas.
No, it's not the release. It's the idea starts here, and then that's the tool. That's your toolbox.
It's exactly. It's just like when they first put a computer in between the instrument and the tape reel, right? So that you could splice stuff there without having to have a razor blade. Like, it is, and then, you know, sometimes it gets, you know, like we're saying, it is a tool. And I find that anytime that I've done that, which I've used it, but what we end up doing is using, that's the demo. We've never used.
That's who you go to the producer with. That's
exactly
what you go with and say, hey, would love to get it to sound like this. Let's bring our, let's bring our guys
in. Here's what we are on the demo. Let's capture these elements. Let's try some other stuff, especially if you've got some of these, you know, the best players in the world, you know, in there, and you want their input, you know, their musical input. So it's definitely a tool, and it's here to stay. You know, I'm like everybody else, like, you know, some of the, like, you know, country, you know, music, like, song generation, you know, there's like
the robot cowboys.
The robot cowboys, and then they're all just like gay.
Yeah.
You know, they make him say the gayest stuff.
Yeah, they mess with them. Yeah, they put like the weird things, like the outsider music almost.
Yeah, but, I mean, I'm talking about literally the lyric of it.
Like will spoofing.
Be, yeah, it will spoof it. Yeah. It's like, and it's like that's funny for a minute. You know what I mean? And then it's like, I'm not worried about that sort of like taking.
No, because those guys aren't, those things aren't out there playing shows. Yeah, it's a joke, and it's been taken really far, and it's a wild
really
thing
far
that we're talking about.
It's taken so far. It's funny in that sense.
Yeah.
But speaking of completely unrelated.
Yeah.
Completely unrelated. Talk about taking stuff too far. Dude, my algorithm has blessed me in the last week or so. Bro, I've been getting these videos of those 90s decoration shows, decoration scents, and these clips.
I don't even know what that is.
Like, dog.
Enlighten me. What's up?
Dog. Let me tell you what was going on in the 90s.
I was born 95, I missed out on a lot of
this. Dude, I didn't
good
know
shit
this was going. This is like when the HGTV channel or whatever it used to put, TLC used to be, these design shows were on, and they would be, a lot of them were like the like design on a budget ones, and like, bro, they fucked up so many houses with, like, bro, they painting rugs on hardwood floors.
Oh shit.
Like handwriting cursive around the top of the kitchen that says like Chabella and all this shit, but like painting it. Bro, it is, it's my favorite thing. And if you're on there, dude, I've been slaying. I've just been on the couch watching League Pass, and I'll just be in the middle of TV timeouts, just like in the comments, just like making myself laugh, like roasting. The comments are the best part. They'll be like, you know,
well, it's one of these accounts. I got to look this shit up, dude, real quick, dude, bro. This is a special level of brain rot that I have not achieved,
bro,
yet. I'm into like the Rizzler and shit like that. Dude, I'm on that level.
The decorations that you'll watch, you'll be like, oh my God, this is awful. And then you'll go to the comments, and the comments will be like, yeah, millennial beige was a trauma response. And to this stuff.
Decoration Central. I got to look.
Decoration Sense. It's like CENTS or something like that. And they'll have these accounts that put them up. And it's like the most hilarious shit in the world, dude. And the comments are what is so funny. The comments would be like, I can't even think of the ones right now, but they're the best, dude.
I'm gonna have to look into that.
Yes,
for sure, dude.
Yes,
that's how, like, the phones pop up on our algorithms is wild, man. Dude. I've been getting I've been talking to my Midwestern friends a little too much.
Yeah,
and I've been Edmund Fitzgerald for a
Oh my God,
I've been,
dude,
deep in the Edmund Fitzgerald train for about
my
a month
player,
and a half now,
bro.
I've been heavy into it. Like, I'm all team Edmund Fitzgerald now. Like,
oh, man.
It's the Midwest 9/11, bro. Like, it's a big deal.
It's Midwest.
It is. I got buddies in Michigan and Ohio that go nuts over that shit. They're drinking for those 28, 29 lost souls, brother.
Bro,
like,
Gordon Lightfoot over here just putting out,
like,
bangers.
Literally, if I scroll on Instagram for a few minutes, I'm going to get
getting
an
the
Edmund
bumper
Fitzgerald,
sticker.
Bro,
Midwest 9/11 is crazy.
It is. It is, bro. It's a big thing. Like, it's a big deal. They go, I'm trying to find one here. Now, of course, I say it's not going to pop up for me. But I get, like, Edmund Fitzgerald. I mean, I've been sending them to my buddy, too. So I've been, like, kind of encouraging it. I'm not getting one now. Now I'm getting all the – I'm a big New York sports fan, so I'm getting all the Giants just fired their defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
We fired the head coach, so I'm deep in that stuff too, and like baseball offseason. Do you watch a lot of sports? You were
talking
about League Pass. That's NBA, right?
Yeah, NBA. NBA. So my wife loves, like, NFL football. She kind of likes – she'll kind of tolerate college football, and then – basketball she doesn't really like, except the Denver Nuggets. Like, we get to watch.
Oh, is she from Colorado?
No, I just introduced her to the beautiful game. And look, okay, this is great. Talk about some more shit that I know too much about. So I'm a hoops head. I'm a hoops guy.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah,
I mean,
I grew up.
You're tall enough for it.
Yeah, like, man, I grew up playing. You know, my hoop dreams took me all the way through college, and that's what I wanted to do, but I wasn't good enough. But here we are. It's good. Nikola Jokic is having one of the greatest seasons in the history of basketball, and he's won 3 MVPs, and he's playing better than he ever has. He's playing basketball at a level that's like the same. It's like the same as like Ohtani's baseball, what he's doing on a baseball diamond.
What's his stat line right now? Because I've been following the Knicks, but that's
Jokic,
I limit myself to.
Jokic is averaging a triple double, just under 30 points.
He's averaging a triple. I mean, I know it's early in the season still, but averaging a triple double is crazy.
It's crazy when you do it and you win. You know, Westbrook did it and they didn't win.
Yeah.
He does it and they win, and he's doing it on an unbelievable efficiency. Like, I don't know. I'm probably boring everybody to death.
13-4, damn.
Yeah, and they lost on a back-to-back the night before last to Sacramento, and they got a bunch of guys hurt.
Leading the team in points, rebounds, assists, and steals.
Bro, he's leading the league.
That's insane.
He's leading the league in rebounds, assists, and I think steals, and he's like second or third in points. Anyway,
that's crazy.
I got new music coming out, and it's all about Nikola. So my wife started calling him Daddy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it doesn't even bother me. It doesn't even bother me. She's like, is Daddy playing tonight? And I'm like, yeah. I'm gonna act like that bothers me, but it doesn't, because it makes you want to watch Nikola Jokic.
Do you get to a lot of basketball games?
Man, I don't, because, you know, it's like the Grizzlies are just, you know, too far away to just like buzz over there. They played. Denver played Memphis last night, which if we weren't doing this today, I would have gone home for Thanksgiving a day early.
Yeah.
But no, we couldn't. But
do you go to like the SEC tournament when that happens here? Have you been to that at Bridgestone?
Yeah, I go to the SEC tournament. I used to do a little bit of sports talk radio way back in the day.
Oh, no shit.
In Arkansas, yeah.
I'm a diehard sports talk radio fan. I listen to WFAN out of New York every day.
Dude.
That's what I grew up wanting to do. That's what led me to this. I wanted to be a guy. I was a communications major. I know you were too.
Yeah.
And it's like, I wanted to be on ESPN or on The Fan or on Comcast or like I interned at MSG. Like I wanted to be talking Yanks and Knicks and Giants and Rangers and all that shit.
Yeah.
And then it led me to country music. But good sports talk radio is just, it's mint, bro.
You want to know what the best sports talk radio is? Is calling in to a proud big market, or not calling in, listening in to a proud big market after a terrible loss.
Oh, bro, that's the fan right now. We have the Giants and the Jets.
It's
bro, listening to Tiki Barber, Evan Roberts talk about the Giants every week is un-freaking paralleled, bro. It's unparalleled because Tiki's not an angry guy, but he gets pissed and the callers freak out, dude. It's the best. It's,
dude, I'm a big, like, you know, I consume a lot of podcasts and it's just this is another golden age for like, I remember even like on tour, even when I was a kid, like back in Florida, you know, before I go to school, you know, SportsCenter would be on, like it was always a part.
Stuart Scott, those guys.
And then, you know, we'd be touring around, you know, back in the day when it was van and trailer and we get to whatever hotel that I could, you know, Motel 5 or whatever. And it would be SportsCenter, Family Guy. That'd be what was on TV. And like now I can't watch First Take or anything like that. It just like kind of bores me. But I consume a lot of podcasts, you know, because you'll get some really smart people talking about some really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some domain expertise.
Dude, absolutely. I was a big Part of My Take guy for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I first moved to town, I was a big stoolie with listening to Part of My Take and KFC Radio. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're great.
And all of that stuff, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm friends with some of those Ringer guys.
Oh, like, really?
Yeah. Yeah. So we gamble in some sports leagues together and they're pretty sharp.
How easy is it for like the NBA, obviously going through like the Chauncey Billups shit and all that going on. And obviously you had Tim Donaghy years ago and like things like that. Well, it seems like basketball would probably the easiest one to rig. Like it makes sense that it would be happening.
I mean, there's
guys can miss shots and miss rebounds.
Yeah, for sure. And in basketball, because there's only, you know, 10 guys on the court, but 5 guys on a team, you know, at any one time, they're playing both ways. That means each player can affect the game in a greater way than you could in any other sport. Right.
Yeah.
And so when you have, you know, prop bets on the 9th player on the bench to go over under or something, you're kind of asking for it, you know, like there's some ways to, whatever. I mean, there's smarter people than me that probably have figured this out. I mean, it's probably good that we have sanctioned gamblers. We could catch it because they caught it. But then also, why are we offering prop bets on Terry Rozier coming off the bench?
Yeah.
You know, in a random game in the regular season.
Yeah, Jokic to get a triple-double is a little bit different.
Yeah, like those star players are like, you know, there's a lot that even in the NFL or Major League Baseball, maybe – yeah, I mean, even there, with injury reports, you know, like how diligent they have to be about those kind of things. They're updated every hour, you know. Yeah. So, it's a wild time.
It's a wild time. And what are you hoping people get from the Drift, from this project, from this new era? Like, what's a message that you would tell the fans that have been riding with you now for years and that are looking forward to new music coming out and this new chapter of you as an artist?
Yeah, well, I mean, first off, you know, the fact that I have people that listen to music when I put it out is like I never take that for granted, and I appreciate it. And it's just like this is my attempt at being the realest that I can be, you know, and with all of these songs in this whole project, and I would say if you've ridden with us, you know, till now, you probably listen to some hints of this stuff, you know, in the last couple of records, but you know, now something new and fresh, and I don't know how long this chapter will be here, but I'm glad it's here, and I'm really excited about it, and I would just hope I get a listen out of it if you've ever messed with what we've done before, or if you haven't, you know, like give me 2.5 minutes.
That's
or
awesome.
Listen like a publisher here in town. Just listen to the verse chorus.
Verse chorus, baby. Verse chorus.
Yeah, give me a verse chorus. And if you're still fucking with it, then uh, then yeah, let it ride. But yeah. Exactly.
Where have been some of your favorite spots that you've gotten to go on tour? Because you've gotten to go to. You were touring, and you talk about the van and trailer days. You talk about buses. You've been on some great support slots over the years. Gotten to go out and do your own headlining thing. Mm-hmm. Where are, like, if you had to pick like a top three markets, we won't even go venues. We'll go like markets where you're like, fuck yeah, I want to go back there.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, I love like Southern California, like San Diego.
Oh, Moonshine Beach, Moonshine Flats,
exactly,
brother. Yeah,
exactly.
We're hosting at Odie's now, which is with Michael Harris and
Ryan
and all those guys.
Yeah, I met my wife there.
Really?
Yep. She was living. I met her out there opening up acoustic for Michael Ray. And,
damn,
and then
that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
and
back in the day,
it's like 2018, and then 2019, and then 2020, we came back and did our own headline tour there, and that was awesome. And then we, you know, my wife and I didn't date for like 3 years in between then, and then, you know, here we are. But I did meet her out there, and that's my favorite place. It's my favorite.
You'll have
place.
To come check out Odie's if you haven't been yet, because it's set up just like Beach and Flats. It's like a venue that doubles as a bar.
Perfect.
It's right where Rebar used to be.
Oh,
on,
sick.
On Division Street.
We
host there every Wednesday night. We do the full band showcases in there, and
done deal.
There's a green room. There's a big video wall. Like it's the people, the guys that were running the club
opened that joint with
Matt and Brad and the Old Dominion guys.
Sick. Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
It's sick. So San Diego. Where would two others be?
Man, I've had a lot of fun. I've had a lot of fun in the Northeast too. Like I've Long Island was great. Like Mulcahy's is awesome out there.
Yep.
Gramercy Theater in the City was the shit.
That's one of the things with having a hit at radio. New York City embraces the fuck out of that.
Bro,
like those
I
big
mean,
Northeastern cities like Boston, Philly. Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. That was our show that we played right before COVID. We were up at Gramercy and
oh wow, you were in New York right before it happened.
Bro, I was in New York on a Tuesday, played Gramercy, had a day off. Something. Yeah. A day off. Wednesday, went and saw Hamilton. Maybe it was Monday, Tuesday, actually. Went and saw Hamilton. And the next day, they closed all of Broadway down. We had a show in Salisbury, Massachusetts, and Foxborough. And we went and played our show in Salisbury, and it was like half full. But it was like sold out, but it was like half full because people didn't come because of, you know, COVID. And then the next day, we're on our way between Salisbury and Foxborough, you know, up around Boston. And we got the call, the tour's canceled, everything's canceled. I remember that bus making that U-turn on the highway right there. And we came back to Nashville.
Pike, yeah.
Oh, dude.
What crazy times, man.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the Northeast and then anywhere else.
Northeast. Man, I love, dude, I mean.
I know it's hard to say because you've been doing it so long. You've had great times all over the place.
Yeah, man, it's hard to say. You know, I love, you know, I grew up in that Texas country world, so I still love to, you know, we've had some great shows in Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin. You know, we got to play Chesapeake Arena one time with Chris Young on his tour. It was great. Played Rupp Arena a couple times, actually. Yeah, it was
that's
cool.
A big for a college
huge.
Arena. It's
Rupp
like,
Arena's fucking 20,000 people. Dude.
It's like
it's
the
huge.
Size of MSG. Uh-huh. Like it's ridiculous how big that arena is and how much those people love country music.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's some little pockets too. Like there's a place just up outside of Spokane, Washington, in Idaho. Unbelievable, like. People were screaming so loud that like we couldn't hear Pacific Northwest is awesome.
Have you ever hit a golf ball off the gorge?
Yeah, I have actually. Yeah, the gorge in George. That was fantastic. You know, there's some great venues down
in the Carolinas, the Coyote Joe's, the Blind Horse Saloon.
Oh yeah, Saddlebags.
Our boy, Saddlebags down there in Savannah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, man, loading in on that cobblestone road,
bro. We shot a music video there, or part
oh, really?
Of one. We
no
shot,
shit.
We shot part of the Everywhere But Home video there, right? Yeah, yeah. Those places are awesome. I've had some great shows in Florida, like Fort Myers. Yeah, the ranch down there is awesome.
Oh, the ranch. You get the ranch on a rat, which most nights are rowdy in there.
Yeah.
That's a room where those people just go nuts, dude.
Go crazy,
that Dallas
man.
Bowl's another good
Dallas
one down
Bowl
there
in Tampa.
Florida.
Yeah, dude. I grew up just south of there, so I mean, there's just so many cool places. The Midwest is awesome too. I mean, it's
they're the
just,
friendliest people. I love the Midwest mentality.
Yeah, man, and it's great. And the right time of year, it's perfect. You know, it's kind of sucks ass when it's cold, but
yeah.
Whatever, dude. It's worth it, though.
All those folks in Wisconsin, Minnesota, South Dakota, like that area, they go nuts.
It's so great, dude. It's so much fun. They love their country music, and they love to party.
Love cold beer. More beers are consumed in the Midwest, I think, than anywhere.
I would totally agree, and I, like...
Oshkosh, Wisconsin? You ever been there?
I have been, dude. I've been everywhere, bro. Wisconsin's awesome, man. I've been to Oshkosh. I've been to... up around Green Bay. We've been to Duluth, you know, Minnesota. I've been to every state. We toured Hawaii and Alaska. Like,
wow,
we've been everywhere.
Not a lot of guys can say that. You've done all 50.
Yeah, I'd say I toured Hawaii. I did like a, I did a deal for CMT, like a Hot 20 salute, Hot 20 countdown, like salute to the military because there's a lot of bases out there.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and it was kind of last minute around Christmas, so I took my mom for a Christmas present to Hawaii.
That's not a bad Christmas present at all.
And then they were like, yeah, you and your tour manager will get you there. And I was like, cool. But I just put my best friend's name as my tour manager. So CMT like flew him out there. He brought his wife. And dude, the four of us just vibed out in Hawaii. And like, he was trying to tour manage me, and like, he's having absolutely no idea like what. He's a real estate appraiser. Like, he didn't
That's
even
awesome.
Know. And then at the end of the thing, they were like, oh, man, y'all have such a good rapport. Y'all work so well together. Let us know what other artists you have. Talking about Buddy Will. And that's what this hat is.
Yeah.
Talking about Buddy Will. And he's like, yeah, yeah, man, I'll let you know what other artists I'm working with. And
I'll get you the roster.
Yeah, I'll get you the roster. He was like, dude, I'm a real estate appraiser. Man. So,
that's awesome,
yeah,
bro.
That was a great one.
That's awesome, man. So going back to the Drift, this new project, when are we looking at stuff coming out?
When does Sugarcoat come out? 12/5. Sugarcoat's out 12/5, and then after Christmas, the next one in the chamber that I've got, will fire off, and then we'll probably do the third. You know, whatever. You know, usually the life of a single, you know, it usually takes something like 6 weeks to like do something, promote something, kind of thing. So. You know, with the holidays being in there, so we'll see, but
it's awesome, man. 2026, yeah. The year of the Drift, man.
The year of the Drift, man. I'm so pumped about it. Like, it's like, it's hard to kind of talk about without making my time making kind of country, the music that I was making. I don't want to like make that sound like I'm not proud of that, or was it, that wasn't what I wanted to be doing. But at the same time, this is scratching an itch and like more fulfilling in a way of like the reason that I came to town,
yeah,
you know, because I really, you know, I kind of thought that I would have written, I thought I wrote Pray For You for like, you know, fill in the blank artist at the time.
Yeah.
And then it changed my life and I'm very happy. But, you know, now I'm just, you know, I don't feel like I owe anybody anything except the songs to be what I want them to be. And I'm blessed with people around me that believe in that kind of vision. And it's just kind of gets a little dumb talking about songs so much,
but
like, you know what I mean? Like I want people to go listen to it. Like I said, verse chorus, you know?
Yeah, man. Hey, it's a thing where if 10 years from now, or later on, if you look back on it and you hadn't done it, you'd say, man, I really wish that I had done this. So it's,
100%.
It's something that you want to do. It's that fulfillment, and mm-hmm. You're the boss, man. You're the CEO of what you want to fucking do. A lot of artists don't know that. And you've been able to have creative freedom with your past stuff and seen a lot of success. So I'm very excited to see where this chapter goes, man.
Man, thank you.
I'm pumped. I'm stoked.
Thank you very much, and appreciate y'all having me on today. And
dude,
yeah,
absolutely,
I'm a listener, I'm a fan. So,
dude, we'll, come hang at Odie sometime.
I will.
It'd be full circle for you and the wife if you guys met at one of those Good Time properties out there.
Absolutely.
In San Diego. They've talked about Raise Rowdy, us going out to San Diego and doing some stuff too.
Oh,
those folks have been really good to us, and I've been out there before. I know it's a party at Beach and Flats, so that's cool. You have that part of your story.
It's a party in perfect weather all the time.
Dude,
like,
God bless San Diego. And seriously, thank you so much for coming on and hanging out, man. And everybody go and be on the lookout for The Drift. The project's coming out. Be on the lookout for Sugarcoat out here December 5th. And be on the lookout for more stuff from our boy Matt Stell. Our tallest guest that we have had. The microphone placement is absolutely pristine. What's that watch you got on, too, by the way?
Oh, this thing, this is, thank you for asking. This is an Oris.
Oh, yeah, bro. Hey, we're working on some stuff with them right now. So yeah. Razor Audi about to be in that Oris family, too.
They're a great partner. They're a great partner. My stupid fat wrist, I'm on the absolute last, like, I kind of like the leathery, rubbery band. Yeah. I'm on the, like, the last hole.
That's how some of my boys are with their hats.
Yeah.
The last hole hat,
just
guys.
One little ring, like a lunch lady bra. Just one little clasp.
That's awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Y'all be sure to check out our friends from Surfside as well. No bubbles, no troubles. It ain't a seltzer. It's a Surfside. Go surfing. Great iced teas, green teas, lemonades. We love you, Surfside. We appreciate you. And for more on us, visit RaisedRowdy.com. For my man, Matt Stell, I'm Matt Burrell. This has been Outside the Round.
Been the kind for staying one place for too long. I ain't never been the best at saying I love you to a girl I love. Only got a couple tricks on my sleeve, they usually just make them leave. So if you know me, if you really know